All right, we're back on Friday Face-Off, and we haven't had too many guests on this program, but nobody really near the stature of Mitch Albom. Mitch, how many Sports Writer of the Year awards has it been? Did you lose track?
Oh, more than I deserve, I'm sure.
I don't know about that. I've sat next to you in the press boxes all over the world, and I've seen your work, worked with you, and we had a lot of good times together at the Free Press, Mitch.
I don't know how well your radio audience knows your print life, but Keith Gabe was one of the hardest working sports writers that I ever had the chance to work alongside, and at a time when people would sort of settle for whatever the team was telling them, Keith was always a guy who would go in and dig more. He wasn't afraid if somebody didn't like him. He wasn't afraid if somebody didn't like the question that was asked, and he'd go ask that second and third person. And we are woefully short of people who do that in the sports business these days. And it was an honor to work alongside you, Keith. And plus, you explained more hockey to me than I had a right to know, because I didn't really understand the game that well when I got to Detroit, but I did by the time I was done working with you.
Well, maybe you should have given him a thank you on the musical, Mitch.
Hey.
Well, the musical doesn't really contain that much detail, so I don't know if he wants to be associated with it.
Mitch, my wife, Joanne, and I saw that show at the Hockey Town Theater with the late Dr. John Finley and his wife, Genevieve, and we had a blast. That was a lot of fun. Tell us a little bit about the production that's coming to Traverse City.
Well, it's you're right. We started the show last year. Mm-hmm. I was a musician before I was a writer, and so it's a little bit of a bucket list thing for me. And I decided to put together a musical about the sport that I thought was both the funniest, and the most earnest, and the most disrespected, that being hockey. And so the premise of it was ridiculous, and the show was ridiculous, and that's what makes it funny. It's a little bit like Spam-a-Lot on skates. And the premise is that God looks down and decides that man has created too many sports, he's too distracted, so he sends an angel down to pick a sport and destroy it to teach man a lesson. And he accidentally picks hockey. He thinks he's picking hooky, but he can't spell. And he picks hockey. A fan jumps up out of the stands with a Stanley Cup on his head, kind of, and says, "Oh, God, no, not hockey, anything but hockey." And he gets down on his knees and he begs God, if he can find 100 pure hockey souls, will God save hockey? And God speaks and says, "Find five. You're never going to find 100. And he says, "Okay, five." And he picks these five kind of sad sack people. He thinks he's picking Wayne Gretzky and Stevie Eiserman and people like that, but the angel can't spell, and he writes the names down wrong, and he ends up with Dwayne Gretzky, an African-American guy from Bed Bath & Beyond, and Dawn Cherry instead of Don Cherry, a hair and nail specialist from New Jersey.
Wow.
And these five people end up having to save the sport. And so it's all ridiculous, and they sing all these songs about hockey to try to score points before the show is over. There's actually a big scoreboard that hangs, and they have to get 10 points before the show is over, or God destroys hockey. And if they get 10, then God destroys something else. And so, you know, it kind of moves along with the scoreboard, and it's got a lot of music, singing, dancing, and even video clips from real hockey players who, Keith, you know, only hockey players would agree to do this. I couldn't ask a basketball player if my life depended on it, or an NFL guy. I'd get their agents. I'd get million-dollar requests. I asked
right.
Steve Eiserman, Brendan Shanahan, Don Cherry, Pavel Datsyuk, Darren McCarty, Joey Koser, if they would just come film some stuff that we could throw into this show. Every one of them did it for free. Mm-hmm. Said, yeah, sounds like fun. Why not? And they came down, and yeah. So they're in the show talking to the actors as the show goes on, and it makes it for a good three-dimensional, fun experience.
Wow. Where did you come up with the concept, Mitch? I mean, you're a fabulous writer. You've written a couple other plays, and, of course, Tuesdays with Maury. But just your description of it is not what I would see as a normal thought process.
I try. Actually, we have a recorded message at the beginning of the show that I read, and the last thing it says is, "Welcome to Hockey the Musical, a show with no meaning whatsoever." And, you know, I try to caution people, because you're right. Sometimes people will come out, if they're fans of Tuesdays or Maury or something like that, and they'll be expecting, you know, some life lesson thing. And this is not that. This is just for fun. And I like to laugh as much as the next guy. And I wrote it at a time when there was a lot going on in my life that wasn't happy. And it was a nice relief. So
That's
really
great.
Really, 90 minutes of just pure laughter and singing and dancing and hockey.
As your program said that I read in the program somewhere, it's a story that gets you from here to there with hockey pucks.
That's right. that's the entire metaphysical force of the play was summed up in that sentence.
Well, that's great. I mean, I saw Spam-A-Lot. I'm really looking forward to seeing this. When Keith was first talking about it, I was thinking it touched me a little bit like Damn Yankees. Was that a musical that you ever saw? Did that ever float through your head when you were doing it?
Oh, yeah, but that's way too good a musical. It has a little bit of heart to it because hockey is an underdog sport, as we all know. And,
yeah.
And you know, there's a lot of underdog sort of attitude about this. And at one point they read off some things that you shouldn't mention about hockey on a list. And, like, hockey went 25 years without a TV contract. Most players don't have their own teeth. A red light can signal a goal, or you're in a prostitution zone. You know, all those kinds of things, and they're, you know, it pokes fun at it. But in the end, you know, I can't tell you what happens, but it's a feel good kind of thing. And you know, I don't know if Damn Yankees is too lofty a comparison, but it is a lot of fun, and particularly for Michigan people, because there's a lot of references to the Red Wings. There's a whole song about being a Wings fan that's set to kind of a melody like. When You're a Jet from West Side Story.
West Side Story,
but,
yeah.
You know, I wrote most of the music myself, but it was sort of a derivative of that. And it's all about being a Wings fan and how, you know, there's an octopus segue in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. And they sing about octopuses and they sing about beating up people. There's even a line about Claude Lemieux ducking like a turtle and hiding. And so if you're a Red, it gets the biggest ovation every night. I mean, that thing, like right in the middle of the show, people stand up and start applauding. I think we're going to film it for the Red Wings and let them play it at their new arena as like a music video, because it's a love song to being a Red Wings fan. So I know Michigan people will enjoy seeing that.
Well, I'll disagree with one tiny thing you said there, Mitch. This show has a ton of heart. It's a feel good story. It's a kind of a show that could probably best exist, not only exist, but it seems like it's a made for Detroit, made for Michigan production. Traverse City is kind of hockey town north. It's where the Wings have their training camp. I go to training camp every fall. Yeah. There's a ton of hockey fans there. I have a sense that this show is going to do very, very well. But this is a really, it has a lot of heart and inspiration.
I'm really looking forward to it. You know, I love musicals. I was in a few when I was in high school and stuff, and I still like to go. So, and really funny ones are hard to find, Mitch. So, what were you channeling? I mean, were you sitting there at the piano? And I like to imagine you, I know you don't smoke cigarettes, but I get this whole Gershwin thought, like you're there and you're pounding out.
I eat cereal. That's sort of my version of that, you know, while I'm sitting at a piano. And it's kind of like that. I mean, you do, I don't know what it is about musicians and oral fixations, but, you know, you sort of sit there and you have to be either chewing gum or smoking or eating something. And that's exactly what I did. I tried to, it was a marriage of two things that I love, you know, writing and playing around with words and music. And you know, a lot of times in a musical, when they launch into a song, your brain kind of shuts off. It's like, okay, well, this is the song part, you know,
right.
I'll wait until they get back to the play part. But I didn't want to do something like that. So every line in the song is funny and is worth listening to. And I tried to make the lyrics, you know, like there's a song about God. They argue about who God really favors in hockey, Russians, Americans, or Canadians. And the Canadian guy says, no, God is a Canuck, you know, and he sings this whole song about, you know, God is a Canuck, Tim Hortons is in his cup, you know, stuff like that. So it's all about God being a Canadian. And you know, it's not like throwaway lines, like, well, I don't have to listen. The lines move the play along. There's even a kind of a racy number where the female in the show, who's fantastic this year, she's new this year, and she's an unbelievable singer. And the guys are teasing her about how all, you know, girls are just groupies for hockey players and stuff. And she says, oh, yeah, well, I've dated a lot of hockey players, and I can tell you, you know, I can judge them too. And they say, well, how? And she sings this song to the melody of It's in His Kiss. You know that
mm-hmm.
old Betty Everett song, I think she sang it.
Yep.
You know, and
the Shoop Shoop song.
It's in his stick. You know, sort of double entendre on stick.
Right.
And the way that the reaction of the guys to it is really funny. And so all the lyrics in the songs are part of the show. So you never kind of check out mentally. Go, well, I'll come back when the song's over, and I think that makes it kind of go by really fast.
I know you compared it a little bit to Spamalot, but as you describe it here, I'm thinking more Spinal Tap.
It's a little bit of that. It's a little bit of that. You know, it's just shy of Spamalot, where they say, "Bring out your dead," and they, you know, and then the guy says, "I'm not dead yet." You know, yes, you are. Punk, and I couldn't come on the head. We almost have things like that, but I'm just happy people enjoy it. It doesn't need to be compared to anything else. It's had a great run down here in Detroit. Mm-hmm. It's finishing up this weekend. And there is a moment in the show, Keith knows this, where they go in search of Scotty Bowman. They need help. and they say, if only Scotty Bowman were here. And then they point out in the audience and they go, oh, my God, Scotty Bowman's here. And they go out in the audience and they pluck somebody from the audience. And for a moment, you know, there's this whole anticipation. Like, oh, my God, Scotty Bowman's actually here. And the person they always pull up is usually a kid or a grandmother. In some cases, we've had a lot of famous people have come through.
The show I saw was Debbie Stabenow.
And Chuck Gatica and Bernie Smilovitz and a bunch of the mayor of Detroit and different people come on. So I don't know who will pull up in Traverse City or the other places, but it could be a celebrity. I can tell you that this Sunday,
it'll be Keith.
It's actually going to be the real Scotty Bowman. And hopefully nobody in Detroit is listening here on this.
Oh, but, cool.
Oh, that's great.
He has been wanting to see the show, and he's coming into town. Oh. And that'll be a great moment because
this Sunday
it's the first time in 2 years that we actually mean what we say.
Okay, that's going to be happening in Detroit.
Yeah, in the Detroit one, yeah.
Good deal.
Maybe he'll show up there, too. I don't know. We've had a lot of I know that John Scott lives up there, the NHL All-star, you know, captain, guy who won the MVP award, who I wrote a movie about.
That's what I was going to ask you, Mitch. Where does that stand? Where are you with that production?
Yeah, so the script is done, and we're going to we're in the process of going out to different actors now, and I think it's going to get done. I mean,
it's a new project.
It's really promising, and we got a great director, and I think it's going to happen. So anyhow, John lives up around there, and I wouldn't be surprised if he shows up for one of the shows and we could throw him
on
stage.
That's terrific. Dallas Drake is up there, too.
Yeah, Dallas lives in T.C.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, there you go.
Mitch, I'd love to spend a lot more time with you. I know you're pressed for time, and so are we, but this question's been kind of running around in the back of my mind. And originally, you grew up on the East Coast and came to write for the Free Press. What was the moment, and now you've lived in Detroit, and you seem like you're a Detroiter now. Is there a moment that you can think of where you decided that you love Detroit?
Wow. That's a really interesting question. To be honest with you, the first week I was here, before I ever started writing for the Free Press, I came into the office. Keith will remember when we used to have offices to write out of. And I came into the office. There was a letter waiting for me, and I hadn't written anything yet. And coming from the East Coast, the only time you ever got letters was when somebody hated
you. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think, oh, my God, how can they? I didn't even say anything yet. And there was a letter, and I opened it up, and they had written a little story about me arriving. I was going to be the new sports columnist, gave a little bit of my background. And it was a letter from this older couple, and it was just beautifully handwritten, and it said, "We read that you're coming to Detroit, and we just want to welcome you, and we know you won't stay here long because none of the good ones do. But while you're here, we hope you have a good time."
Wow.
And I kept that letter forever because it was, you know, I always wonder, like, why are you already assuming I'm going to leave when I haven't even gotten here yet? But there was that sort of underdog mentality that, you know, nobody stayed in Detroit too long, especially if they were good. And I sort of right then became kind of determined to say, I'm gonna prove them wrong. Wow. I'm going to stick around. And I have. That was 32 years ago.
You replaced Mike.
So it was probably then was the beginning of it.
Well, I'm glad I asked that question because it's a great answer. Because you replaced Mike Downey, who was really beloved in Detroit, and you easily filled and eclipsed those shoes. Do you ever give Downey crap about it?
Oh, totally. Because I was offered both jobs at the Detroit News and at the Detroit Free Press at the same time. You remember they were trying to hire, when Mike left, both papers were trying to hire a young columnist.
Right, right.
And they both interviewed me, both offered me a job, and somehow both offered me the exact same amount of money, which I'm still trying to figure out how that ever happened. They say there was no collusion. And I called Mike and I said, you know, I've never been to Detroit. You know, what do you think I should do? And he said, you belong at the Free Press. It's the right place. They'll value your writing, your style of writing, and you know, go there. And it was largely Mike's recommendation that ended up, you know, sending me there. So, I always give Mike credit, and I don't think I replaced him or outdid him in any way. I think I was just lucky to take the mantle from him. Mike's a fantastic writer.
Sure is.
Well, Detroit's been lucky to have you, Mitch. I mean, I can't count the number of columns that I read by you in all your novels. I don't think there's a better writer on the planet that can express grief and loss better than you. And, you know, it's an art that is really difficult to come by. So, and I want to thank you because I've gone back and read some of those things when I've had to deal with loss in my own life. And you're so eloquent about it and put it in so many different pockets. I know there's probably tens of thousands of people that have said the same thing to you. But, I mean, you've been a treasure for Detroit in particular and Michigan overall, and you know, thank you for sticking around. Thanks for that old couple writing that letter and giving you the chutzpah to stick around.
And a wonderful colleague to work with all those years for me at the Free Press, Mitch.
Well, thank you. You guys are really kind to say that. And I'll be up there at the opening show next week in Traverse City. I'll be doing a meet and greet, I think, a little VIP thing, maybe even a talk back afterwards. So if you guys are around, by all means, I'd love to see you, and also, you know, all the great people up in Traverse City. I never get a chance to be there enough, but I love the Opera House. And
yeah, it's a beautiful building.
Great venue, yep. And I hope everybody comes out. Look forward to saying hi.
Well, we'll move heaven and earth to see you. I know Keith wants to see you.
Absolutely.
It's been a long time, and he's done. He's been a great boon for us. You're right. He's a hardworking guy, and we're lucky to have him.
Yeah. I'll see you next week.
Thanks, Mitch.
Mitch Albom, thank you so much for joining us on Friday Face Off.